Hey everyone, and welcome to the Pisgah Podcast.
We are your hosts. I'm Drew, that's Mangler, and you are listening to Pisgah. We're coming to you live from the start house at a Southeastern downhill race.
Ooh, I wonder where that can be. Drew, we took a vacation last week to Mexico.
Si, senor. And most of us survived.
Yep. A few members of the crew acquired some wicked bugs while we were on location. Yours truly acquired their weird bug 2 hours after they got home. Taking me out for quite a few days, but I'm alive. And Drew, you had, well, I guess both of us kind of had a little physical bang on some trail side scenarios down there. But how's your knee?
It's good. It's good. I'm walking. I walk fine. I was able to ride this weekend, and I wasn't the only impact casualty. Poor John's pinky finger got a little traumatized too. But I would rather have gotten injured there than at home, because I've been injured here enough, and I need to start getting those experiences of getting injured in weird places.
There's that, yeah. but we'll say the trails down there in Mexico are spicy. It's like many other things, such as ice from a cooler and different sort of spices.
Yep. Spicy in the middle of nowhere, and don't eat the cooler ice. But
don't eat the cooler ice.
We'll do an episode on that later on. We got a lot we could say there, so let's roll on. What do we have coming up?
Well, if you are a Southeast Enduro fan and want a little more racing action, then you are in luck.
Yeah, three of the big single event enduros in the region have teamed up to bring back the Southeast Enduro Triple Crown.
That's right. While these are single events on their own, with their powers combined, they become Triple Crown-ish. And you've got the Bigfoot Enduro over in Blue Ridge, Georgia, the Pisgah Enduro over here in Old Fort, and then the most recently announced to the table is the
Cranksgiving Enduro. While previously held at Canoga, and before that, it was held at Paris Mountain.
Yep.
The Cranksgiving Enduro has jumped across Pinnacle Mountain and will be at Rock Creek this year, November 17th to the 19th.
Yes, and we expect that event to be kicked up probably a few notches over these last couple of years at Canoga. I just got a feeling on that one.
Well, speaking of on fire, Pisgah and DuPont will be doing prescribed burns this week. They should be settled down by the weekend. The Pisgah Ranger District will be doing some burns between Country and kind of lower Bennett to 276 and Avery Creek Road. DuPont will be doing some burns in the Cornmill Shoals side around Little River and Cedar Rock Trails.
Yeah, fortunately the wind has kept the smoke kind of going south. I mean, unfortunately that's just blowing the smoke right into downtown Brevard, but it's not blowing east to my house, and it's not blowing north to your house, and so it's keeping a lot of the area clear, so it's not too bad. But did see some pretty crazy pictures from our friend Daniel Sapp, who went up to the parkway to check things out earlier.
Thanks for risking your life and lungs for us, Daniel.
Yep. Valentine Bikes, which is not really a bike shop but more of a shop for bikes, well, they do some small number custom frames. And while Valentine has built up a beautiful gravel geo-inspired frame with some sweet parts from a bunch of our local friends like Industry 9, King Creek, Rockgeist, Gravello Workshop, SRAM, and Asheville Recyclery, they built this bike up to do a raffle to raise some funds for a family that is having a solid go at it with cancer, but doing a pretty kick-ass job at fighting back. So if you'd like to buy some raffle tickets to win this bike to help support some close friends, and that should be announced at around the 1st of April. And then you should hit up valentinebikes.com. And we also have a link here in the show notes. And it's $10 per entry.
That's right. It's a fundraiser for a solid cause and some friends of the Pisgah Podcast that we hold in high regards. So NICA season has kicked off this past weekend in Elizabethtown, North Carolina at Crankin' at the Creek. The Hendersonville Hellbenders had 19 riders representing from first-timers to their veteran team members. So we're psyched to follow their progress this season.
Yeah, we'll have to keep an eye on that. Also, Sorba will be having their annual summit in Old Fort this year, and there are a number of events and programs to sign up for. It's April 14th and 15th, and you can find more info on that at sorba.org.
And a piece of news I picked up from WLOS is that Wolf Ridge Ski Resort has new owners. A couple from Johnson City, Tennessee, have taken ownership of the resort that is in Madison County, North Carolina, and they plan to make it a year-round destination. There's currently no talks of bikes in the news article, but I think we all know a way that is popular to keep a lift access mountain open all year. Western North Carolina and surrounding areas have the population to support that.
Yeah, it's one of those things, but mountain bikes can keep a lift park open year round, but it's kind of the chicken before the egg thing, as far as like, you got to have a good park to attract riders. Wolf Mountain's kind of been one of those places that we hear rumblings around, such and such is going to build some trails there, or they're going to start doing some trail action or something there, and nothing's ever really happened, but maybe we can start trying to put some pressure to try to find something out, or at least get that on their radar with, you know, the success that Canoga has had. Rock Creek is also showing great success. Beach and Sugar, that side of Asheville could easily support a lift assist bike park. It doesn't have to be the gnarliest stuff. More downhill, right here in the center of downhill Southeast Territory, where there is one of the country's most vibrant trail and downhill hotspots. I mean, it's not rocket science, but, you know, we're also not the ones that are counting the beans over there.
For sure. And to settle some of those rumors, in the past, there was a bike park there that was very short-lived, called 26 West. And there have been downhill mountain bike races hosted there in the past. All these are more than 10 years ago, back when it was called Wolf Laurel, before it became Wolf Ridge. So we're going to pay attention to this and see what's going on. And if anybody else has a line of communication with the current owners, let us know. We'd love to get in their ear. Or if you would like to do that on our behalf, let us know. We'd like to be part of this conversation.
Always.
It would be a great addition to the Downhill Southeast calendar, for that matter. And speaking of Downhill Southeast, it gets kicked off this weekend in Sequatchie, Tennessee at the Trials Training Center.
Yes, we are excited for it. And fitting for this week's interview, I sat down with Downhill Southeast stalwart Rachelle Pageot and had a great chat with her about her past year and what this next year is looking like. Rachelle, I got to meet you and hang out with you a bunch last year doing Downhill Southeast, and it's like to have you here in the studio. Kind of give us a little introduction on who Rachelle is and what she does.
I'm Rachel Pageot, or Rachelle. I say it both ways. It doesn't matter. I'm French-Canadian. I come from Quebec, and I moved down here first in Brevard 3 years ago to go to college, but also to ride bikes full-time because Quebec is great, but it's got a lot of snow in the winter, so I didn't like that much. And then I just really liked it. So now I live in Oliver Springs by Windrock. I race downhill and a little bit of enduro. Before that, I raced XC. So I've raced all kinds of bikes. Downhill's my favorite.
Obviously.
And I'm 27 and...
Right on. You just had a good day.
Such a good day, actually. Like, one of the best days in a while. I rode my bike. First of all, that's what made the day so good.
Step one check,
right? Weather was beautiful, perfect, for especially in February. Another check. All the friends were there. Friends were putting on the race. Friends had made the trails. Friends were there. Friends helped me get my bike running perfectly. And I raced my bike, which is also something I love quite a bit. Whenever there's a race, I try to go.
Yep.
And then I won the race too. So just a really wonderful day. Trails were honestly just so freaking good. Like, everybody was just like, man, is that just me or the trails are like really good? Trails were just perfect. Bike was perfect. Just good day.
Awesome. So the kickoff for the Enduro Southeast race, technically it wasn't a points race, right?
No, because Logan decided that this year the series would be mostly in the fall, so yeah. September, October. But they still put on this race at Canoga for now, so it's just a one-off. Everybody come race for fun.
Awesome. So you went out and you raced for fun, and you won.
I did.
And how'd and had fun.
Yeah, it was really good. It was so, it was a little bit, not crazy, but I haven't really ridden my bike in 5 months because I was coming back from a shoulder injury and a knee injury. So I took the fall pretty much off. Like I rode a couple times just because I couldn't stay away. But it had been a long while and I was on a brand new bike. Like literally built the bike yesterday, rode it for practice and then raced it. And everything just fell into place pretty good. So I was pretty happy with that.
You mentioned new bike and you dropped some social content this past week on a new bike sponsor. So yes. What do you got working on?
Propane. I've been so excited about it. And it's crazy. It took forever to get the announcement together. Like usually you say that in like January 1st, you're like, that's what I'm doing. And then you get going. So it's so hard to wait and not tell anybody. I mean, I told a bunch of people, but
yeah.
Try to keep it a bit of a secret. And then the bikes got here and I built them up and they look so good. And I think it's going to be really fun bikes, but I think they'll be really good bikes for me. They're a bit shorter, a bit lighter, and I'm really stoked on that.
Nice. Propane's kind of new into the U.S. market. Mm-hmm. We've got Ride Rock Creek will have propane for their demo fleet, both enduro and downhill bikes. And those will are what you're riding too, right?
Yeah, that was a pretty funny coincidence because I got on a call with them and I was like, the guy's originally from, or one of the guys from the Propane North America is originally from Brevard or Asheville. And I was like, oh, have you ever ridden Canoga? And he's like, no. And then I was like, oh, well, now you'll really have to come because there's two bike parks now and they're both so good. And he's like, oh, well, I really will be coming soon because we're going to be the demo fleet, the rental fleet at Rock Creek. And I was like, what? That is so sick. So that's really cool. I'm kind of excited about that because, I mean, I'm going to ride Rock Creek a lot. I'm going tomorrow and I'm so excited. But I think we can do some fun things together, like film with David and like just do some demo stuff with them.
Awesome. Awesome. Any other new sponsors kicking off for this year?
Yes, actually, I switch over to Factor Wheels. I was with I9, now I'm going to be with Factor. I'm really excited for that too. Really good wheels. And they're from Georgia, but it's kind of local-ish.
Yeah, Ben's just across the mountain.
Yeah, exactly. Good Ben's dude. Super nice, and he's really... I like working with people that are like know me or that seem excited to like work together, and it's really the case here, so I'm really stoked. Like, he was here this weekend, race two, got third, and had my wheels ready for me, so that was nice. Just perfect.
And like his partner, Emily, gave you a run for your money a little bit at the race.
Yeah, no, it was really cool. Good racing. Yeah, she got me on GNCC, which was also one of the funnest stages. So that's rad.
Awesome. Awesome. So let's step back a little bit. You mentioned that you originally came down here to go to Brevard College. Mm-hmm. So tell me about that. What brought you down here?
First time I think I came down to Tennessee area, like was in 2018. I came down for like a little training camp with some of my friends from Quebec, a bunch of downhill racers. And at the time, it was my very first time having a downhill bike. So I was still kind of an enduro racer, really. The guys I was traveling with were all downhill racers. And we just came and rode for fun. And then we checked out Windrock. And Windrock for a first time on a downhill bike is quite something.
Windrock first time is something.
Yeah, first time period is pretty impressive. And on a downhill bike for the first time. And it was a very wet weekend. So like super muddy. First race on the big bike, I was still running XC shoes, like it was an XC pedals. Like just every time I see the photos, I'm like, wow, I really didn't know what I was getting myself into. And it was such a crazy weekend. Like on one end, I was like so stoked and I had really had a good time. I think I got like third or something, but also like I cried a bunch of times on track. No. Like I remember right before, I think it was race day was the muddiest day. And you get like an hour of practice. So you do like one lap just to check it out. And I remember I was pulled over on the side of the track because I had crashed like two or three times. And I was crying because I was like, this is horrible. What am I doing goodness. Here? I can't do this. And I was like, I need to leave. Like this, what am I doing? And then one of my friends who was like a downhill racer for a long time just rides past me and then he just crashes. And then
it
I'm like
help.
Mid-cry. Actually, it did because I'm like mid-cry and I look at him and he was fine.
But okay.
I kind of start laughing because I knew he was fine. And I was like, oh, I don't think it's just me who's struggling. I think everybody's struggling.
Okay.
And then it was like kind of put things in perspective. And I was like, right, just get back on your bike, get to the bottom, and then do your race run, and that's that. Like, what? There's nothing, like, wrong. You're fine. Just do it. And I just did it. And I had a really good time, and then I came back a year after for that same race. And I was talking to people, and I realized that just having random conversation, it was a thing, because I wanted to move here, because obviously it was a place to be.
Yeah.
But I was stuck doing college in Quebec. But then I realized that it was a possibility to kind of move here and just complete my degree, the same degree. I didn't have to start over, and also the tuition thing was... Because, like, when you're from Quebec, you see the tuition in America, and it's, like, this crazy thing. You're like, oh, there's no way.
Because like out of state and out of country,
Tuition in Quebec is extremely cheap, like, dirt cheap.
Really?
Yeah. Like, right now I'm paying $2,000 for tuition for a full-time student.
In your master's program?
In my master's program. That's actually really good. That's not because of scholarships or anything. That's just the price it is, which, so it's crazy. I mean, it doesn't include, like, boarding fees or anything.
Yeah, just the tuition fees.
It's just the
fees,
classes,
yeah.
But still, like, it's insane cheap. So, like, at first, before knowing anything, I was like, well, I'm not going to go out there and pay $20,000 for, like, a semester. It just doesn't, as much as I'd love to, it doesn't make sense. But then I got to talking to people, and I realized that there were cycling teams at schools here, because we don't in Canada we have like basketball teams and football,
the
and
traditional
that.
Sports stuff.
Yeah, but no cycling. And then I realized there were cycling teams here, so I was like, oh man, maybe I should look into that. So I just sent an email to the coach in Brevard. I honestly didn't even think I'd get an answer. He called me the next day and he was like, are you actually like interested? And I was like, well, kind of, like, how does it work and all that. And then it worked out. The semester after that was, I think, like May, probably 2018, I think. Next semester, I was at Brevard, and I moved in, and it was crazy. And wow. I was kind of living the dream, riding my bike year-round and racing with a team also was such a cool thing, like collegiate racing. Like, even though it's not, like, as a professional mountain biker, like, it didn't, like, matter that much. Like, for sponsors, they don't really care so much. But to go with the whole team and, like, bring points and all that, it was just a really special feeling. It was really cool.
Like the team building, like the camaraderie.
Yeah, like,
the
it feels
support.
Like a team sport, because you're bringing points for your team. So every position matters, everybody on the team matters, and everybody's stoked for everybody. And I'm a big team person, so that was really cool, and I really liked it. Even stayed an extra semester just to get to do it over again. So that was really cool. And then graduated last December, and then I was like, oh man, do I have to go back to Quebec now?
Oh, that's right, because student visa stuff.
Yeah, legally I have to go back to Quebec. Like, right now I live in Oliver Spring, and I stayed here most of the fall, and now I'm here for a bit. I can't work here because I don't have a visa.
Yeah,
that's something I'll have to, like, figure out and explore eventually, but for now it's somewhat fine. So
somewhat fine.
Yeah, for now it's okay. My mom would say differently. My mom was really stressed out about it. But it's fine.
When you're living here in Brevard and going to school here, obviously you read a lot of Pisgah stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What was some of your favorites?
Crazy enough, though, you would think I would have written more here in the 3 years of living here. I got kind of not unlucky, but I was here for 3 semesters in the fall. And I think out of 3, 2 of them I was entirely injured. Like, 1 year I had knee surgery, so I didn't ride for almost the entire year. Actually, the first year I moved here for school, I broke my wrist at Mount St. Anne World Cup. So I was out for like half of the collegiate season, came back a week before nationals just to race nationals.
Mm-hmm.
Then the second year, I had to get knee surgery wrist surgery again. So I was out for almost the entire season that time too, which ended up being the year of COVID. So kind of worked out in the end. Nothing really happened anyways. And then third year, which was last fall, was super excited to come back to finally get a proper collegiate season. And I had a really bad concussion at Snowshoe World Cup. I just crashed, passed out on the track. And obviously, if you pass out, it means you have a pretty decent concussion.
Yeah.
At first, I was like denying it. I was like, no, I feel fine. I don't know why everybody's freaking out. But then I was like literally repeating myself. You know, the classic, like, I didn't even notice I was repeating the same story over and over and over.
Wow.
So that took me like about almost 2 months to be fine, to get cleared, like, from the physios at school. So then once again, I came back right before nationals and managed to race nationals. So I wish I rode more. I mean, I still have some favorites. Canoga to start with. Yep. I haven't ridden Rock Creek yet, so I can't. I can't put my two cents on that one, but obviously it'll be really good.
You hung out there. You know it's rad.
Yeah, I know it'll be rad. Yeah. It's really cool. I'm a little bit nervous. Like, I'm going tomorrow, but Nico and the guys there built some pretty gnarly shit, so it'll be good. Like, I think there's room for really good progression between, like, the tracks they built all the way to the racetrack where it's, like, actual World Cup style.
Yeah.
You can struggle. And that's a good – I guess it's a good thing.
I mean, I'll be honest. I still have not ridden the pro track there.
Yeah, it's got things on it. Like,
it's got things on it.
And it's not like there's that one thing that's scary. There's like multiple things. Like the log you got to pop over and the other one and the rock. He's just made these really big compressions that are pretty, pretty not only hard and look scary looking, but they could be consequences to them. So
yeah,
which is the whole point of why they put them in. So that's good.
And you've ridden World Cup tracks, so you know.
Yeah, it's actually good. Like, it's stressful, but it's good to have this in your backyard because then you get used to it. And when you go to the World Cup, you're like, oh, well,
yeah,
I scare myself every day, so I can scare myself today.
Exactly. So growing up in Canada, you mentioned that you kind of were more like an XC racer.
Yeah. I actually started racing bikes. In my opinion, it was kind of late. I mean, in hindsight, it's not that bad. 13. I mean, I knew how to ride a bike before that, but I started racing XC when I was 13. I was originally a ski racer, like alpine skiing, but I live in a pretty small region, so the mountains are not that big, so I was doing good there, but like outside of that, it was nothing special, even though I dreamed of going to the Olympics. So when I started racing bikes, I went straight to XC because that's the only thing that was kind of available where I lived, and I actually did it because I had a crush on a little boy that was a ski racer.
Okay.
And I was like, well, I see him only in the winter. That's kind of a bummer. Maybe if I ride bikes, because he raced bikes in the summer. So I was like, oh, I'll start racing bikes too. And also, I mean, it was a win-win because it was good for training. That's what I told my parents.
Okay. That's what you sold them on.
Yeah, exactly. I wasn't going to tell them I had a crush on somebody. And I started, and it was like, first, I remember it was first training with, like, I joined a club because otherwise I didn't know, like, where to start because my parents weren't, like, mountain bikers either.
Okay.
So I started, and it was just so, so cool. Did my first race within, like, 2 weeks. At first, I told my parents, like, no, I'm not going to race. This is really just for fun, just for training. But I'm insanely competitive. Like, I just love racing. Like,
they probably knew.
Like, I got my bike yesterday, and I raced today just because I just couldn't. Missed one.
Could not.
So I raced, and then after that I raced almost every weekend, and I quit ski racing like the year after just because I was like, oh, I need to focus on bikes. This bikes are it. Like, this is it. And then I raced XC for almost 10 years, I think. All like my junior years, went to like world champs 3 times for XC and like 15 World Cups or something. It was really cool. Then I just kind of burnt out.
Okay.
I moved to Vancouver Island and trained there with the national team and like doing the 18, 20 hours a week. And I loved the grind, but something wasn't clicking. Like I was enjoying training and putting in the hours, but I wasn't like in love with it. Like it wasn't, I don't know. I felt weird. And then my coach told me one day, he's like, you know, you don't have to race XC if you don't like it.
You're like, wait, what?
Yeah, when he said that, I was shocked. I was like, what does he mean? Like, I'm putting all these hours. Like, is he telling me, like, I should quit? Like, well, who says that?
Yeah.
And at first, I didn't really take it the right way because I was like, what? But then it got me thinking. And over a few weeks later, I was like, wait, like, what did he mean? And I just, like, he just left it on that. It was, like, not even a conversation. It was just a one-liner. He was, like, the national team coach, the Olympic coach. Like, I really trusted him. And he's a really, really nice person. Like, you would never say something just like to mess with you. So even though I kind of got hurt at first, I was like, well, it stuck with me. And I just thought about it. I was like, there's no way he just said that to be mean or like to just bug me or just, there's no way he would tell me to quit. Like, that's not something to do. So then eventually I was like, I just tried an enduro and I was just like, maybe I'll just try something else for now and just come back to it next season. And then I kind of just raced enduro for a while, and I was like, wow, now I need to pick which one. And although it was a little bit hard to, like, quit. For me, quitting on XC was not so much, like, the discipline. It was, like, quitting on lifelong dream of going to the Olympics. Because if you race enduro or there's downhill, there's no downhill, Olympics. Yeah. And at the time, there was no national team for enduro. Now it's kind of starting, but to me, it was like quitting the national team that was the hardest. Like, because it's just wearing the maple leaf and the red jersey for me was a big thing. Like, yeah. It was a big achievement. And I was like, damn, I have to give that up if I switch to enduro. But I was like,
you got to think about your happiness.
Yeah, I was
too.
Like, dude, you are crying every day training for XC. Every race, you're unhappy because, like, what, regardless of if it goes good or bad, you end up crying because it's never good enough. If you race enduro, that's the first thing I love about enduro is that you don't know until you're done. Unless you check lifetiming, but back then there wasn't that much lifetiming. And also, you can just not look at it. And even throughout your stage, you don't know. Like, I mean, if you have a big get off, then you know you're not doing all right. But also, you're like, oh, I have a lot more stages and a lot of people crash. So that was a big thing that I really liked. And also, as an XC racer, I was always really good technically, and that was my strength. So I was like, why would I not exploit that and race my strength and like give up the part that I don't really like and that I wasn't good at it, but I was more of a technical racer. So yeah, then I went enduro, and then a couple years later I started at the Eastern State Cups. It's a series like kind of similar to Daniel Southeast,
but a bit northeast.
I raced all these enduros, and then at some events they had both enduro and downhill. So I was like, one time there wasn't that many girls racing the downhill, so they were like, oh, why don't you just register? And I was like, I don't know, I don't race downhill. And they're like, well, it's the same thing, it's just one run. And I mean, they're not crazy tracks, so I was like, I guess I'll try it. And then that was the first weekend I tried both, and I won both. And I was like, what? That's crazy. And no, at that time, no one really was doing both. But then after I did it, then a bunch of other people were like, oh, why don't we all? Some people started doing both, and now it's like a thing. A lot of people do both now, and I think it's really cool. So that's how it all started.
Awesome. You kind of like summed up a couple of questions I had there. It was great. Last year was a roller coaster for you, wasn't it?
Oh, my God. Yeah. I think it's part of the reason why I was so happy today, because for some reason, things just seemed to fall into place a little bit better this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, last year was just, the more I think about it, the more I'm like, wow, such a roller coaster. I feel like I didn't race all season, and I didn't really, honestly, which is a really big bummer because, you know, I graduated in December, and then it was my first time kind of ever that I had my whole winter to train and be a professional cyclist, where I just woke up. I mean, I still worked a little bit like a customer service at a bike shop online. So,
yeah.
But like, I think it was like 12 hours a week. So it was really nothing. So it was like bike racing, and I was fired up. I was living by Windrock, training with the guys every day. And I felt really good going into Fort William. Like, I was training for that track and doing things right. And I was so excited. And it was one of the first times that I was feeling confident flying over to a World Cups, because I mean, World Cups are scary.
Yeah.
And as a privateer, it's also really it's scary, and also like it's hard to be out there by yourself. Like, automatically, if there's a little part of you that you're like, well, you're by yourself, so you don't belong. And that's like, that's the thing I struggle with. It's always like, oh, you get there and you're like, oh, I don't belong here. But for once, I was feeling good. I put in the hours, and I was just really fired up. And I was flying out there for out to Europe for 5 or 6 weeks with my enduro bike and my downhill bike, because I was going to do a little bit of both. And I get there and my bikes don't show up, which is like a thing, like, especially the last couple of years since COVID, like there's a lot of that happening. So at first I don't freak out. I'm like, yeah, this happens.
Yeah.
It's a thing. When you're North American traveling to Europe, it happens a lot. So I was like, all right, it's cool, I'll be there tomorrow. It was like, I think I flew there on Monday or Tuesday. And then they're like, oh, it's cool, we'll put on the next flight, it'll be here tomorrow. I was like, okay, cool. And on Wednesday, it's not there. Then I'm like, oh, well, it's track walk tomorrow. Like, it needs to be here soon. And then it never showed up. It took me 2 months to get my bikes back. 2 months. And for the first 3 weeks, they just had no clue where it was. And at first, they were like, oh, it'll be here tomorrow. So it was really hard to just move on with it, because they kept telling me it'll be here tomorrow.
Yeah, every day you're hearing tomorrow.
Yeah,
tomorrow,
so I was in Scotland for 3 weeks, and two of them I was literally just waiting on my bike, because I really believed them that it was going to show up the next day. So the first 2 weeks were just horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, I just didn't do nothing, because I was just waiting, because I really thought it was going to be there the next day. And then the third week, So Fort William was kind of a bust. Like, I ended up racing. I rented a bike the first day.
Oh, that's right. You rented a demo bike. I rented
this clapped out track session, like, so bad. I rode the first half of the track, which is like the technical part, where you're not like going that fast. So the bike felt fine. But then I skipped the motorway, which is, it's kind of backwards in a way, because I was like, it's just the motorway is such a fast, like, it just jumps. Mm-hmm. Like, you're going really fast. And the moment I would start going fast on the bike, it felt like everything was going to fall apart. Like, I felt like the wheels were going to fall off the bike, because it was an old rental bike that is not made to do that. And also the rental place said, we can only rent it to you for practice. You can't race on it. Like, legally, they weren't going to let me race on it. But at first, I thought my bike was going to be there the next day. Like, cool, so it's like, it's fine. I'll just do two laps. I literally did two laps on that bike. No, I think I actually just did one lap. Because it took such a long time to get it all figured out. So I did a lap on the rental bike, and then I brought it back and was like, thank you. Like, still was thankful that I even got to ride, and mm-hmm. I still had like a fairly good time. I mean, it was a really sick track. I think it would have been a really good track. I really loved it. The next day, my bike still hasn't shown up, and I managed to borrow a Common Sol Supreme, which is what I was riding, but a size up, which... Common Sol is already a very big bike.
So you're just like,
and now I was on a size up. It was like from a guy, an elite guy who's like, I don't know, probably 5'10", like somewhat short guy, but still like a proper big bike. But I mean, I was like, well, of all tracks, Fort William is the best track to ride on the size up because it's a fast track.
I mean, see where you're going with
that. You find yourself excuses to think that it's going to work. At least that's what I do. And then I got one practice lap on that bike. I did the motorway on that bike. And I just... And for me, like, the motorway, the jump line is what I struggle with the most at those big races. Like, those things scare me. But in a way, because I was like, well, you only have one lap to clear everything on this track, because qualifying is this afternoon, so you got to do everything on the track. So I dropped in and I did everything on the track by myself. And then I was like, wow, maybe if you told yourself that every time, it would be better. So I did that. And then I go up for qualifying. I drop in and I'm feeling like as good as can be considering all that. And I get a red flag, which means that I have to stop and get a rerun. And I was like, oh my God, this just can't stop. It just wouldn't stop. So I ride past the track, get to the bottom, get back up for the rerun. And then they're like, well, we've started with the elite men, so you guys will have to wait until we're done or something. Oh, and they don't give us really a time frame. They're like, just wait for a little bit. And then it starts pouring, and like the wind is crazy. It's pouring rain, and you're like, oh my God. And then they run in and they're like, oh, actually, we just had another red flag, so we'll let you. There's like three or four of us girls getting reruns. Just go now. Like, go outside, go to the Stargate. You can go now.
No prep time. Like, just go.
Literally. Had to drop in before Amore or something. Oh, all God. The pro guys are warming up, looking at you, and you're like, oh my God, is this for real? It is pouring rain. Then I crashed in the second corner, and I was like, the button on my pants ripped off.
Oh, God.
My sleeves are rolled all the way up. The levers on the bike were bent, and it wasn't my bike. Like, it was a borrowed bike from another racer.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, this is just it. Like, there is no point now in me riding this bike that's not mine, that's too big, that the levers are bent, the button in my pants is broken. This is just it. You really, like, I was like, I tried everything I could to make it work.
Something's telling you not to.
And it didn't work.
Yeah.
And I turn around and I crash right in front of Logan. And he's like, are you okay? And I'm like, I mean, yeah, I'm fine. So that was it for that race.
At least you crashed in front of someone you knew.
Yeah. And he's filming, didn't even get a clip.
Oh, come on, Logan.
Come on. Anyways. So yeah, I wait for my bike 2 more weeks. It doesn't show up. And then I'm like, all right, the bikes are not showing up. We're done. Like, I'm done waiting for them. Then that was the EWS week. I managed to borrow again or rent from a bike shop. Because usually, again, they don't like renting bikes for races. Yeah. But I explained the whole thing, and the guy was so nice. He's like, actually, we don't have bikes that you could rent for the whole week, but we just got new bikes. I could build you one, a brand new bike that you could ride all week. And I was like, dude, thank you so much. So I raced the EWS on a rental bike, a brand new one this time. So it was actually a really good bike. It was like a Trek Slash. Felt pretty damn good. raced the EWS was like average results because hadn't ridden for 2 weeks on a borrowed bike. At that point, I was just happy that I was riding good trails and all that. And then I'm like, all right, well, it's Leo Gang next week. I need to figure something out because I'm not going to miss all the races that I came here for. Like this, it's all my money that I put in to go to the races. And all my money, everything I do. Like I've sacrificed everything to be here.
Yeah.
And now I can't race because the airline lost my bike. So for like 3 days, I was just calling everybody I knew to find a frame, because finding a size small frame is actually kind of hard. So I found one from Comments All Canada, found a friend that was flying from Vancouver that could pick it up, fly it over for me, and then managed to find, like, scattered all the parts together. Like, Nico helped me out with a set of brakes. TRP had a derailleur for me. I borrowed cranks from Logan. I bought a bunch of little parts from the bike shop. Stuff like that.
Wow.
And then everything sort of came together. And that was, like, within a week that I had to figure that out. And then on track walk day, finally managed to get all these little parts from everybody and build a bike. All day I was just scrambling to get it together, because every time when you're building a bike from scratch, every time you think you have all the parts,
you're missing something.
Missing this little adapter, missing this little bolt, missing, it's crazy. Like spacers and stuff, it never ends. But I got the bike together, and then I raced Leo Gang, then went to Innsbruck and was all good. And then, was it Andorra? I blew my knee out at Andorra.
Oh.
Like tore my ACL, kind of. A little crash, nothing crazy.
The twist of that knee.
Yeah, that was Lynn's ride. So I didn't race. I was first day of practice and was like so freshly hurt that I couldn't. So skip Leger also, because it's too gnarly a track to try to race on a fresh. Well, I just couldn't race on a freshly torn ACL.
No.
So I missed that. Flew back to Canada for nationals. And I managed to race national pretty decent. Got like third, which... I mean, I wanted to win, but I got third, so that was fine.
So wait a minute. Have your bike still not shown up?
No.
Oh.
And at that point, I'm still calling KLM like almost every day, because sometimes they tell me they found them. No, at that point, they actually said, oh, we found them. Do you still want them delivered at the Fort William address? 5 weeks later, I'm like,
oh,
no, ma'am. I am flying back to Canada as we speak. The races are over. So they're like, oh, well, where should we send them? I'm like, you need to send them back home. Send them back to Canada. So they say, all right, cool, be there like tomorrow. And then I'm like, yeah, sure.
Sure.
Heard that one before. And it literally took another 5 weeks for them to just fly them back to Canada, which is ridiculous.
Wow. Because
I picked them up on my way to Mount St. Anne, which is in August. And they were lost in May.
Wow.
So yeah, it was just absolute nonsense. So yeah, tore my knee. Got myself back together for snowshoe and was so excited. Snowshoe's a really good one, even though every year I broke my wrist twice and got a concussion. I was really still really excited for it. And it was a wet, like really rainy, muddy weekend, which I really love.
Okay.
I love those. So
that's pretty average for snowshoe.
That's pretty normal for snowshoe. It's just a thing. It's just how it is. Get qualifying together. I was really stoked. Got in the main show. Last lap before the race, I crashed on that jump. And that was a pretty famous crash, I guess.
You slid forever.
I slid and banged myself real good. Broke my shoulder.
Yeah, you got ragdolled pretty hard.
Ragdolled so hard. At first, I didn't think it was broken. The doctor was like, I don't know. Maybe it's just an AC separation. Maybe you can race next week. And at that point, I've gotten so many hurdles over the year. I'm like, I'm racing Mount St. Anne. I don't care if my shoulder is separated. I want to race. It's my home race. I just really want to race. And I didn't race. It was just so painful. I got geared up the first morning of practice. And everybody's like, what are you doing? Why are you geared up? You can't even raise your arm like 2 inches. And I was like, I don't know. When it's on my bar, it doesn't feel that bad. And then I tried so hard. Like I went up, got in the start gate, then rode a little bit and was like, all right, this is nonsense. You cannot ride this track. You can't even make it down the track, so you can't race it. Then I would sit on the side of the track and then be like, no, just try again a little bit. Like, try again. Maybe if you like flex everything, it'll feel better. So then do two more corners and you're like, no, you can't do this. Then I would pull over again. And I did that like 5 times.
Oh, goodness.
Until I was like, I hit something that actually really hurt, and I almost died over like a 2-inch size rock. And I was like, Rachel, this is like, stop it. Like, just stop.
Yeah.
And then I just rode literally a double track down. And I was, even that was just so mega painful that I just like, all right, you got your answer. You can't race, put your bike away. Try again next time. And at that point, there was like 4 weeks before Worlds. And at that point, everybody's like, just get air tags, do this, do that. I did everything. I got the air tags. I had a direct flight. I got to the airport 3 hours early. They lost my bikes.
Wow. They just didn't want you to fly with bikes,
ridiculous.
Did they?
It was ridiculous. I rented a bike. It wasn't working. I didn't race Worlds. Then it was Val d'Isol, the very last race of the year. And I managed to borrow a bike again and raced Val d'Isol on a borrowed bike with a broken shoulder. And honestly, at that point, that was kind of a win. Like, the result wasn't that good. But at that point, I was like, you know what? Because Val d'Isol is also one of my favorite tracks. So I was like, you raced your favorite track, which is also the gnarliest track, on a broken shoulder with a borrowed bike. Call it a win. Call it a day.
Yeah.
Just move on.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's pretty much it for the season, which is just... So now every time there's a little hurdle, I'm like, you know, that's fine. Everything is figure outable. This season can't possibly go worse. So just fire it up to just get going.
Yeah, let's hope not.
Yeah, right. I shouldn't say things like that.
In the midst of doing a bunch of these World Cup races, you were also showing up and doing well at downhill Southeast stuff.
Yeah. I mean, those races they're so well put together that in a way it feels like a World Cup. Like, and that's what Nico is trying to do. Like, yeah. From the race schedule to the racetrack to the media coverage now, like, it's insane how good these weekends are. And honestly, every time I go to one of these, and it's a consensus with my friends that also race, it's like, every time you go to one of these, we come back on such a high, because they're always like such amazing weekends. And it has nothing to do with the weather or like the venue, or it's just always such a good weekend of racing. So yeah, I honestly try as many as fit the schedule, I'll do everything to make it happen, because they're just so good.
Last season, you did not race in the last race at Beach.
Mm-hmm.
Why not?
So I missed two last season, I think. I think I missed the Mountain Creek one. Or no.
You missed Snowshoe.
Yeah, Snowshoe and Beach.
Yeah, but you were at Beach.
I was at Beach. I think it's after I came back from Europe, I think. I remember I drove my van back from Quebec to Beach. I was still sort of hurt. I had just driven down just so that my van would be in Snowshoe. And I knew that I just couldn't race. I think it was still from my knee injury. And I was like, I wasn't going to go at first, because I was like, I knew it would kind of hurt to be there but not race. Mm-hmm. But also I was like getting there too late. I was missing the first day of practice. But so I knew realistically it made no sense to race. But I was like, well, I'm driving back to Oliver Springs and all my friends are there and none of my friends will be in Oliver Springs. So like, I might as well go spend the weekend there and go cheer on my friends. And I knew that, as I said, like the downhill Southeast racing and like the whole vibe there is so good that I knew that even though not racing would be kind of a bummer, I knew that being there would
be a good time.
Just be a good time. And it really was, honestly. Like, I hung out with all my friends. I did like 2 green laps on my friend's bike. And then I was there, and it turns out that I even pondered that at first, but I was there for the overall podium, and I kind of still almost felt like I was racing, honestly. So I'm really glad I went, and it was good to see everybody, and I still left with that little like good vibe, high energy. So
if you would have dropped in and gotten at least 8, you would have won the overall.
That's something I thought about afterwards, and I try not to think about it because But I hadn't done the calculations or whatever, so I honestly didn't really realize I was still in the standings, because I thought I was like, I missed the races, it doesn't matter.
But you'd won all those other races.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I should have. But also, I'm really competitive, so I know that I don't know that I would have been able to just cruise through. I don't know.
You would have wanted to put the hammer
and
down.
I really wanted to recover for the next World Cup, so I was trying to not do quote-unquote stupid things. I have a tendency of doing stupid things, or like rash decisions and like having a hard time, like, yeah. So I decided not to race. I mean,
okay,
but it was really cool. Abby Ronka, who won the overall, mm-hmm. is actually on a heater. She is gonna be something. Like,
we're excited to see her this next year.
So yeah, oh yeah, big time.
Yeah. All right. So some things have changed in your life. You no longer live in the van. You're a home dweller now, hanging out over in Oliver Springs, yeah. calling Winrock home, and you've gone back to school.
Yeah. Yeah, lots of things. I decided to go back to school this fall. I love learning stuff, like reading books and stuff. And I really wanted to do a master's. I don't really have a reason why. I just wanted to do it for a bunch of reasons for what I want to do after biking. I think having a master's is just good. And I also think that the more busy I am, the more productive I am.
Okay.
So I knew that like going to school would help me stick to a schedule of where, well, I have to like do some productive stuff on the computer every weekday or something. So it's easier to build myself a schedule if there's already things in place that need to be done on specific dates. Because like as a professional racer and / influencer, because that's at the moment influencing or content creation is what pays the bill, which is really cool. But it is a job.
Yeah.
It's not a 9-to-5.
It's almost more.
It feels like a 24/7, yeah. honestly. So that's why I needed to add something to my schedule that would force me to have a schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise you just kind of pushing things off and you're like, oh, well, I guess I'll film tomorrow. Or I guess I'll send these emails out tomorrow. And then it just gets scattered and you don't get things done. So I was like, I'll do grad school and it's fully online and it's an MBA digital marketing. So it's really like spot on for what,
yeah, you're already
for what I'm doing,
that.
For what I want to do. And it's honestly super, they're really cool classes. I really like it. So it's really good. I mean, I'm mega busy and I think maybe I bit off a bit more than I could chew right now, but I mean, I'm already halfway into the semester, so it'll be over in no time. And then, this summer I might take a bit more easier on the classes, probably just one class just to say I'm doing something. But
are you finding some of the stuff that you're learning in school right now, are you applying that to some of your marketing and social media stuff?
For sure. Also, like, to especially for like reaching out to people or like having a better understanding and a better way to communicate what I want to do or what I plan to do. And also even just confidence wise, like I'm more confident when talking to like brands or stuff like that, because I know what I'm saying and I know that I know what I'm saying.
And you know what they're looking to hear.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah.
And it seems to be paying off, because I've had a lot of people recently tell me like, you're really doing good with your content creation. Like, do you study this? And I'm like, well, I did just start studying it because I liked it and because I knew it could maybe go somewhere. So I'm trying to be more specific with what I'm doing.
That's awesome. It's cool to see your progression in that.
Thank you.
Yeah. So what's this year look like for you?
It somewhat similar to last year in terms of like race schedule. Hopefully not. Not how it turns out. But so a couple downhill Southeast in the next couple months. Tennessee Nationals, probably both enduro and downhill, which is really cool because they put them on separate weekends this year.
Yeah.
So that's really cool because then you can kind of focus on both and do both well instead of kind of
half-assing both.
Yeah, I didn't want to say it, but that's how it somehow turns out sometimes. Probably a short bit on the West Coast for Sea Otter, 30 Sanchez Enduro, maybe Northwest Cup in Port Angeles, and just try to also sneak in some good riding. Mm-hmm. I feel, and I've been saying that for years, and every year I kind of put it off or it just doesn't happen, but I feel like as a rider, I need to ride on the West Coast more. Because here, we have...
East Coast riding's different.
It's super different. And I love it. I love it maybe because I'm used to it.
Yeah.
It's like, it's techie. It's like gnar. It's like rocks, roots, steep stuff that you kind of don't go fast on. Like, I mean, you go fast to a degree, but it's... We have nothing really wide open.
Yeah, not west.
And I'm not good at what wide open or like easy-ish. So, and out west, I'm not saying they only ride easy stuff, but they do the wide open stuff. And you see it in their clips or whatever. You're like, damn, they're going so fast.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like I need to ride some of that. So I'm really trying to make it a point that to make it out west this summer. And then probably spend like most of the season in the summer in Europe, because that's where all they put the big races on.
Yeah.
And then come back here for Snowshoe Mountain Anne.
And what about some of the Canadian series?
I'll try to do the national championships and one or two of the Canada Cups, which is kind of cool. A bunch of them are like bunched up within like 2-3 weeks. So it's kind of cool that they do that for us. So it makes it more realistic to go do that. And they're also all really good venues and good places. So I'm stoked on that.
Yes, absolutely. Riding in Canada is always a treat.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, BC's, you know, because you grew up there.
Yeah. I need to ride some more of the East Coast Canada stuff, like Quebec, which is where I'm from. Like, the last few years, I've only ridden BC, really, because that's where the races that I can make it are. I really need to.
I love this stuff around Quebec City.
Oh, like, it's so good. All they have zones. So many, like, areas now that you can ride. And they're, like, they used to be more XC stuff, but now they've got some proper enduro and downhill stuff. Yeah.
I went up there, I think, 2018 or 19, and rode a bunch of stuff up there, and it was super sick.
Yeah, it's good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially, like, I think, like, August, September is such a good time of year to ride Quebec.
And then all my other times in Montreal have been work-related, and it's, for whatever reason, it's always been in the wintertime.
Oh, yeah, I was in Montreal for a few weeks here. It's really cool. There's something about Montreal that's really cool. I would consider moving there, but the winter is just, it's rough.
Well, Rochelle, thank you so much for your time. If people want to keep up with you on social media, what's your usual spot?
Instagram is my big spot. I'm trying to do the vlog thing on YouTube.
Okay.
But it's already been 3 weeks of me saying, all right, this week you're starting the vlog. And I think this week actually would have been such a good week to start. I had the bike builds, the filming, the first race, then Canoga, Rock Creek, all that. And I didn't really keep up with the filming.
It's hard to do.
I know. You have to like have the GoPro all the time. Then you have to charge it. You have to export it or have a bunch of little SIM cards or whatever, SD cards. So trying to make a break on YouTube. It's also kind of, it's kind of weird at first. You're like talking to your GoPro and your friends are looking at you and they're like, what is she doing? But I think it'll be pretty cool. A lot of things happen around, so I think it'll be cool. I'll try to do that on YouTube, but for now, mostly Instagram, yeah.
Right on. You usually have some pretty banging reels on Instagram.
I try.
Yeah.
Reels are where it's at now.
Yep. Well, cool. Well, maybe I'll see you tomorrow at Rock Creek.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Awesome. Thanks, Rochelle. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Glad to hear that her injuries have been healed and that the new sponsors are good. This might just be the year that she needs to get back in the grind.
Yes, hopefully so. You know, she had solid results at the Canoga Enduro, went and rode some Rock Creek stuff, had a great time. She's living out at Windrock now, so getting tons of time on the downhill bike, riding, you know, some of the gnarliest East Coast downhill terrain. And, you know, we're going to see her this weekend, so we'll see how it goes.
Yep, we'll be pulling for her and all of her competitors as well. So, Mangler, what is our weather forecast looking like?
Well, it has been very warm and spring-like, as we've all noticed, and hopefully we've all been getting some good bike riding in. Obviously, we got these fires burning in the area for controlled burns, but Thursday into Friday morning looked like some rain showers overnight, which shouldn't be too much accumulation, and leading to a beautiful Saturday, partly cloudy, high and low 50s, low in the mid 30s. That'd be a great camp out night. But pack your stuff up early Sunday morning because some rain's moving in and it's going to get chillier. You know, we just probably just punched through Spring of Deception and now we're back into winter. A reminder that we are in winter. Highs in the 40s, lows in the 20s next week. Yep, I said it. Looks like it's warming up a little bit to the end of next week, so we'll see what the following weekend looks like. But yeah, don't pack away all the wood stove stuff yet. You're going to have to light it back up first of the week.
Well, hopefully all this nice warm weather's got some insects hatching that this next little freeze are going to murder off for us.
Ooh, good call.
And keep them from sucking our blood.
Ooh. Well, guys, that is a wrap on this week's episode. And as always, you can find us on social media. Just search Pisgah Podcast. And of course, our web store is always going with shirts, brought a water bottle still, but we've got koozies, stickers, magnet koozies, sticker packs, all kinds of fun stuff. You can check that out at pizzicapodcast.bigcartel.com.
And if you are as ready for full spring to be over as we are, then click subscribe. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. Old episodes are being uploaded weekly. Buy some Pizzica Podcast merch to support the show.
Well, Drew, I guess we need to ride out this spring of deception for these next couple of days and enjoy it.
Yeah, we'll do it while we can. And otherwise, we're going to get busy with the spring section of racing.
Yep. Downhill Southeast YouTube.